knocking on doors, stopping people in the street, asking if anyone knew of a tall, blonde man living in the vicinity with an ugly mole on his face and who spoke with a German accent. Most people, typical New Yorkers, either refused to talk to him or told him to fuck off. But a few of the older residents he met were friendlier, and through them, Betterton learned that the area known as Yorkville had once been a German enclave. These elderly residents spoke wistfully of restaurants such as Die Lorelei and Café Mozart, about the marvelous pastries served at Klein Konditori, about the bright halls that offered polka dances every night of the week. Now that was all gone, replaced by anonymous delis and supermarkets and boutiques. And yes, several people did believe they had seen a man like that. One old fellow claimed he had noticed such a man going in and out of a shuttered building on East End Avenue between 91st and 92nd Streets, at the northern end of Carl Schurz Park. Betterton had staked out the building. He quickly learned it was next to impossible to loiter around outside without attracting attention or causing suspicion. That had forced him to rent a car and make his observations from the street. He had spent 3 exhausting days watching the building, hour after hour of surveillance, nobody in or out. He'd run out of money, and his vacation clock was ticking. Worse, Cranston had begun calling him daily, wondering where the hell he was, even hinting about replacing him. In this way, the time he had allotted to New York City came to an end. His flight home was on a non-refundable ticket that would cost him $400 to change, money he didn't have. And so now, at 5 o'clock in the evening, Betterton was driving up FDR Drive, on his way to the airport, to catch his flight home. But when he saw the exit sign for East End Avenue, some perverse and irrepressible hope prompted him to swerve off. One more look, just one, and he would be on his way. There was no place to park, and he had to drive around the block again and again. This was crazy. He was going to miss his flight. But as he came around the corner for the 4th time, he noticed that a taxi had stopped in front of the building. Intrigued, he pulled over and double-parked in front of the idling cab, pulling out a map and pretending to consult it while watching the shuttered building's entrance through his rearview mirror. 5 minutes passed, and then the front door opened. A figure stepped out, duffel bags in each hand, and Betterton caught his breath. Tall and thin and blonde. Even at this distance, he could see the mole beneath his right eye. "Holy mackerel," he muttered. The man tossed the duffels into the taxi, climbed in after them, closed the door. A moment later, the vehicle nosed away from the curb and passed Betterton's Chevy. Betterton took a deep breath, wiped his palms on his shirt, put the map aside, and then, taking a fresh grip on the wheel, he began to follow the cab as it turned onto 91st Street and headed west. Chapter 53. Dr. John Felder felt like a third wheel as Poole led Constance by the arm through the Central Park Zoo. They had visited the sea lions, the polar bears, and now Constance had asked to see the Japanese snow monkeys. She was more demonstrative than he'd ever seen her before. Not excited, exactly. He couldn't imagine someone with such a phlegmatic disposition ever being excited. But she had definitely lowered her guard to a certain degree. Felder wasn't sure how he felt about the fact that Constance, who had seemed wary of Dr. Poole at first, had warmed to him significantly. Perhaps a little too significantly, Felder thought sourly as he walked on her other side. As they neared the outdoor snow monkey enclosure, he could hear the hoots and screams of the animals playing with one another, tumbling about their rock and water enclosure, raising a din. He glanced at Constance. The wind had blown back her hair and raised a rosy blush on her normally pale cheeks. She watched the monkeys, smiling at the antics of one particular juvenile who, shrieking with delight, leapt off a rock and landed in the water, just as a child might do, then scampered back up to do it again.
"Curious, they aren't cold," Constance said.
"Hence the name Snow Monkeys," replied Poole with a laugh. "They live in a snowy clime." They watched for a while, and Felder surreptitiously checked his watch. They still had half an hour left, but if the truth be told, he was rather anxious to return Constance to Mount Mercy. This was proving too uncontrolled an environment, and he felt Dr. Poole was approaching, if not stepping over, the appropriate doctor-patient distance with his laughter, his witticisms, his arm-holding. Constance murmured something to Poole, and he in turn glanced over at Felder.
"I'm afraid we must visit the ladies' room. I believe it's over there, in the Tropic Zone building."
"Very well."
They made their way down the path and entered the Tropic Zone. The place was constructed like a tropical rainforest, with live animals and birds in their respective habitats. The restrooms were at the far end, down a long corridor. Felder waited at the head of the corridor while Poole escorted Constance to the door of the ladies' room, opening it for her, and then taking up a position outside. A few minutes passed. Felder checked his watch again. 11:40. The outing was to end at noon. He glanced down the corridor to see Poole waiting by the door, arms crossed, a pensive look on his face. A few more minutes went by, and Felder began to feel uneasy. He walked down the corridor.
"Shall we check?" he murmured.
"We probably should."
Poole leaned toward the door.
"Constance?" he asked. "Are you all right?"
No answer from within.
"Constance?"
he rapped on the door. Still no answer. Poole glanced at Felder with alarm.
"I'd better go in."
Felder, suppressing a sudden panic, nodded, and Poole pushed into the ladies' room, loudly announcing himself to anyone within. The door swung shut, and Felder could hear him calling her name and opening and closing stalls. He appeared again a moment later, his face ashen.
"She's gone, and the back window's open."
"Oh my God," Felder said.
"She can't have gone far," said Poole, the words tumbling out in a rush. "We've got to find her. Let's go outside. You go left. I'll go to the right. We'll circle the building, and for God's sake, keep your eyes open."
Felder sprinted toward the exit, burst out the door, and turned left, circling the building at a run and looking in all directions for the figure of Constance. Nothing. He reached the rear of